Good morning, everybody. I'm Buffy Blazy. If you guys, I know lots of people in the room, and hopefully today we'll have a great opportunity to have a conversation about how to make your business more valuable. If you think about selling your business, and the remote doesn't work either, so I have to come and do this. One of the things that we talk about and think about is, how do we create more value in your business? And depending on who you are and what you're looking at, it can be down the road. It could be 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. Nobody's even thinking about it yet. But while you drive your value in your business throughout time, you actually can earn more money for yourself too. So we want to think about your business as something that you can actually make money from and then support yourself in the future. So here's how this looks. Does everybody here have some investments in their portfolio? Have something, right? You have maybe a financial advisor, somebody else who takes care of your stocks, your bonds, your mutual funds, all those kinds of things. You have some savings possibly. And then for most people, their home is another one, although it's a little risky to put money there, but for the most part, this is it. Here's the statistic. Most business owners, most small business owners, their business investing is actually almost entirely in this. There are very, very few businesses that have and business owners who have a significant amount of other money in other avenues. Okay, so this portfolio, which now includes your business, I spent most of my career in financial services in the brokerage industry, and we used to talk all the time about how do we create long-term value and what do we want in the future, whether it's retirement, how much is our assets are liquid. This is the most illiquid asset you can possibly have, okay? It is not easy to sell a business. And for those that do and have done it before, you can know that the process for getting your business sold is heart-wrenching for most business owners. They have an emotional attachment to it. Most of the time when I call my broker and I say I'd like to sell some stock, it's not an emotional attachment. I don't really care, did I make money on it or didn't I? But as soon as some person walks into your doors and says, I'd like to see all your books, and why did you do this, and how come you did this, and they dig, and they dig, and they dig, and they question you. Mike was privy to a conversation I had with a client recently on a business valuation. You could see we're nowhere near selling this business. She was panicking a little bit because emotionally, it was not the money. It was the emotional part of saying, oh my gosh, somebody's now criticizing my business. Okay, so as a business owner, you have to take a look at that and say, how attached am I to this investment that I have right now? So why are businesses tough to sell? So this is audience participation time. Why do you think that businesses are really tough to sell? What's some ideas? For the experts in the room, what do you guys think?
Not making any money.
Not making any money. Okay, Edie, what do you think?
Strongly associated with an individual.
An individual, yep. What else do we have?
Can you repeat the responses?
Yep. So we have profitability. Revenues, we have the owner is very, very engaged in the business.
A lot of intangible assets.
Okay, so we have intangible assets.
There's Mike? No plan.
There's no plan. What do you mean by that?
They have no idea how they're going to develop, so they have a
plan for it. Okay, so we have a plan for it, but no idea how to get out. One of the reasons why I like this picture is because unrealistic expectations are part of that thing. Right? When I'll ask the question, what do you think this business is worth? And how much do you want for it at some point in time? And the rationale behind that is very interesting, right? If you poured your heart and soul into something for 10 years or 20 years, and maybe you didn't actually take very much money out of it the whole time, your expectation is significantly different than a buyer's expectation might be. And getting that ball in the hole when there's water all over there is kind of tough. All right, so who wants to buy this thing? You guys have business, want you to imagine your business right now. Some people have products, some have services, some offer variations of that. Who wants your business? Okay? The first thing is you have financial buyers. What does a financial buyer want? What do you think a financial buyer wants?
Free cash flow.
Free cash flow. They're buying your profits, right? So when they look at it, they want to see you have a viable business with a stream of cash that when they take it over, their risk starts to be reduced, right? They're just buying what you have. Okay? What do strategic buyers want? They might want the market. They might want a special product that you have. There might be some alignment between what they already do. They're in a marketplace. Your product, your service becomes a complementary, an opportunity for them to maximize their current client base. They see this as a possibility for them to grow. Okay. Now, I'm not going to get into this. There are a lot of experts in this room and other places that can talk about this stuff, and I find it very boring. So we're going to skip this. But just so you know, yeah, years in the financial services, long story short, I went to an event a few weeks ago, and they said they're going to do an economic update, and I thought, oh, that'll be short and sweet, and it was super long, and I thought, I feel like I'm back in an officer's meeting at the bank listening to boring stuff. This stuff, most business owners don't care about this. But the people who do care about this are your buyers, right? They want to know, and what matters in this equation is figuring out for your business what kind of valuation method might be best for you and what people are going to look at. So if you're an expert in the room and you can help some of these people on this later, I encourage you all to talk to them. All right. A little bit more boring stuff, but I am going to spend a minute on this slide. So, very easy valuation piece is how much is somebody going to pay for my business? Does everybody know what EBITDA is? Does anybody not know what it is? EBITDA. Earnings before income taxes and amortization. All right, basically this is the bottom line. Before your account goes in at tax time, makes a bunch of adjustments to it, okay? In your world, it's what's in your checking account for most people, but that's not true, right? I mean, if you're a business owner, a lot of people look at the bottom and say, okay, is there cash in there? This is what your P&L says at the end of the year. Now, this is an interesting fact. Most business owners I know don't give themselves real salaries, but kind of take it out as profit. For some of them, this line is their money that they take out. And so part of your valuation, and this is something that I'm not going to get into, is what comes back into the model from your income standpoint and what goes back out. And if you aren't there anymore, what can a buyer get out of it? Okay, so just very basically here, your buyer is going to buy a stream of cash and earnings in the future, and they're going to discount it. Okay, just because you're getting that doesn't mean they are. And they've got to invest some cash, and they might have some financing issues they have to do, but they're going to want to discount it. And so what you can kind of see here is what you can hope to get once they start discounting it by a certain percent. And these percentage discounts have a lot to do with risk in your business and some of the things that were brought up from our team earlier. So we're going to go over that in a little bit. So here's how this sellability thing comes into the picture. There are 8 factors that drive value in your business. Okay, and we're going to go through each one of these. So I'm not going to go through it separately, but you just kind of have to know that once we get into it and you take your sellability score, you will get a score on each one of these sections to see where you can spend some time in your business fixing it. So the first one is financial performance. Okay? For the financial people in the room, what is the most important thing that people want to see in financial performance? Anybody? Earnings, pure earnings. What else do they want to see? Cash flow, stream of payments. Okay. Here's some other things. The smaller your business is, the riskier it is. In valuation terms, once a business hits at least $1 million in revenues or greater, the risk starts to go down slightly, right? You start hitting these breakpoints, and to a buyer, it depends on what you do, but just in pure simplistic terms from a financial performance, the smaller your business is, the more squishy your financial performance becomes. Okay? And the buyer is going to look at this and say, okay, well, you know, if you're sort of sitting here, and this is all part of the dream, right? If you have a small little shop versus producing the whole thing, you get economies of scale. So your financial performance is really important. If you're a small business owner who does their own books, doesn't review them, doesn't have a financial meeting with somebody, it doesn't matter who, it can be, I do this with my clients, with your accountants, with your financial advisor, to go over these every month and make decisions. You might not actually understand how your financial performance is actually affecting your valuation. Using your checkbook as your P&L statement, also a very, very bad idea. Okay? One other thing that they look at is your growth potential. Okay? How much are you expected to grow? If you're, and I want to ask you to raise your hands, but if you're sitting here and over this last recession, you went backwards or stayed the same, that's problematic, because if you're thinking about selling in the next few years, your growth opportunity has stalled. And so we need to kind of take a look at that and see how we might be able to push that through a little bit. Okay, so this is kind of the same thing. Depending on your growth rate, what this basically tells you is if you can actually see a growth increase of 20%, your opportunity to get a bigger piece of the pie is significantly bigger. Okay? All right. So where can you get growth? Okay, geographic scalability. Okay, you can go, if your small business is just in Minnesota, or you have one location, okay, your first opportunity is to look to, in terms of your business valuation, is to see, is it possible, reasonable for us to geographically scale this thing? Okay, and that can mean anything. It can mean going national, going international if you're not doing that, increasing your base of clients across the country if you're in the service business. You can go horizontally, right? Does everybody know what that means? Right? More products for your current clients, okay? A strategic buyer sometimes looks for this. Okay, so horizontal scalability is, could you offer more to what you already have? And you can go vertical, right? Oh, apologize, you guys, I'm fighting a little cold here. I'm going to take a mini break. Before I start coughing. Okay, you can, so in the vertical scalability, who knows what this means? Let's explain this. Basically, you can buy more clients in different avenues, right? You can go up instead. So think about your growth opportunities in your business. I heard a lot of really different things today in terms of your business models. If you want to grow or you want to create more value to a buyer, then you have to think about each of these channels and where it might make sense for you to actually scale that. Number three, have you ever heard about this, the Switzerland structure? The Switzerland structure, you know, everybody knows about Switzerland, right? It's always kind of that special place in the world where things are kind of tight and controlled and nobody knows anything about anything, right? The more tight and controlled your organization is around these three things, the harder it will be for somebody to want to buy it, okay? Edie mentioned some of this too. Let's kind of talk to your suppliers. If you manufacture something and you have a product or a piece of equipment or something that you need, and you rely on it regularly, and only one person provides it to you. Sorry, Cynthia. And they don't exist anymore, or they have pricing controls over you, or they control the entire stream. You've got a situation under here that a buyer's going to look at and go, you know, I got to take a risk reduction on this. I can't have one supplier. I've met businesses who their entire customer base, I'm going to go over there, is one customer. My father works for a manufacturer that makes a single product for a single customer. They set themselves up purely to do it. Cash cow, though, right, in their book, right, all day long. But they haven't thought in the last 10 years to change anything, and it is a risky kind of area to be in. Okay, so if you are relying on one customer for more than 50% of your revenues and they decide to go somewhere else, you've got a problem on your hands. And the buyer is going to look at that and say, even though you have a contract with them, what happens if something happens to them? Or what happens if they decide they don't want to work with you anymore? You're also at their mercy from a pricing standpoint. They get to dictate everything. Okay? And the last one that I want to talk about is employees. Now, for all practical purposes, the employees are just people you hire. We're going to talk about you later, okay? If you have a key employee, someone who, if they left, would take your clients with them, so service businesses, listen up, okay? If they brought those people into your business and they hold the relationships, and they are key, and there's only one or two of them, you've got a situation you have to worry about. A buyer's going to come in and say, well, what is the chance that this person leaves and takes everything with them? What if they don't want to stay and work for us? Okay, so if you're an owner of a business like that, and you have a practice, like for our service-based businesses here, if you have a practice area completely that's reliant on that person, then we have to take a look at that and figure out how we're going to accommodate that, both from our current valuation standpoint and how we're gonna, our business will be affected, but also about what a buyer might see out of that. Does anybody have any questions so far? Super simple, okay. So now, number four, our valuation teeter-totter. So a buyer's gonna come in, and this might happen right now. If you feel like you have to infuse cash in your own business on a periodic basis, depending on the time of year it is, the nature of your production schedules, all those kinds of things, where if cash flow is constantly ebb and flowing and you're constantly asking for credit or you're kind of going up and back and up and back, you've got a valuation teeter-totter you have to worry about. And so one of the things you're going to want to be looking at is, how do we improve our cash position? It's like the old adage, everybody says, you know, have 6 to 9 months of cash available if something bad happens to you. Businesses need to have some cash available to them as well. This is different than investing in something for the future and needing leverage to do it, needing loan money or something. What we're talking about here is to be able to handle cash flow cycles. And the bigger your business is in terms of those cash flow cycles and the necessary need, the more money a buyer is going to think they have to infuse in your business to keep it running on a regular basis. And they're going to want to discount it because of this. Okay, so I'm going to give you a real life example. I actually have a client who has some issues with this. And the, you know, if you buy, so let's kind of talk about service businesses versus product-related businesses, okay? If you own a service business and you put out an RFP, you get the gig, and you have certain qualifications for getting that money in the door, right? The client doesn't kind of want to pay until they actually receive everything they're going to get. But you're going to have to pay some people and buy some things. Maybe you have travel in your budget. They are requiring you to do something. Cash is going out, okay? You have a pretty big cash gap problem, and the longer your project takes, the harder it is to manage that. So one of the things that a buyer is going to be looking at is this cash flow cycle. How long before I get paid for the goods and services that I'm producing or providing to people. Our goal is to shrink this as much as possible. Okay, so back to the client. Lots and lots of product, retailer, right? I mean, you gotta fill your entire store with stuff. She has a handful of items that sell continuously, right? But she still has to stock an entire shelf's worth because that's what brings people in for this, for the specialty buys. She can't have a store full of six items. She needs hundreds of them. And so we have a significant cash gap problem between the time she's gotta pay for those goods and get them on her shelves and before her money comes in, okay? So one of the things we gotta work on is how do we shorten the cycle, the sales cycle, and the cash. If you're a service-based business, as much as possible, and for everything else, you wanna get as much cash up front as you can, and create services and product mixes that can manage that. All right, so let's talk about those a little bit. Okay? As this goes up, the more valuable a buyer might see your business, okay? So consumables. If you sell something that people regularly have to buy, right? Toothpaste is our thing, you know, you go get toothpaste, it runs out. You gotta get some more. Some people are brand loyal, some people aren't, okay? So a buyer's gonna look at this and say, okay, well, yeah, I mean, we got a recurring revenue stream here. This is something I think could be valuable. The more interesting your brand is, the more valuable it would be, okay? Next piece, sunk money consumables. For those that still have, you know, printer cartridges and they're pounding through those, obviously we know what big money that could be. Buyer might see that as regular revenue streams, okay? Renewable subscriptions. We love the magazine people, right? Because they've got this thing figured out. They just keep sending, they'll send you a bill and they'll just keep this thing going until you pay it, right? But they see subscriptions, a buyer will too. So I wanna talk about subscriptions for a little bit. You know, if you have an interesting business model where, can I use you for a second, Cynthia? So Cynthia sells high-end anti-aging line of skin creams. One of the best things, I also have a friend that works at Shop NBC. One of the big things that we talk about and they have that's a really great model is they get people to sign up for auto renewal, right? You get the best deal you possibly can, 30% discount, as long as you agree to get your stuff every month. And oh, by the way, you can cancel it if you want to, but people don't, right? So if you're thinking about your business and it has an opportunity for you to have a membership or something that allows a constant renewable source for your current clients, because keeping current clients is cheaper and more valuable than constantly having to acquire new ones. Okay? The sunk money renewable subscriptions. The example here, for those who've ever been in the financial services world, know this to be true, because there's lots of this in there. If you have to buy something, a software program like Salesforce, for instance, or anything that has infrastructure. This is a Bloomberg terminal. Bloomberg terminals are huge. All the financial services have them. Everybody buys them. And it's the best money maker for Bloomberg on the planet, which is why Michael Bloomberg is so rich, okay? Is huge amount of intellectual capital. They deliver it. First, you gotta buy the terminal, and then you gotta keep it going, okay? So if your business has an opportunity for that, you should take a look at it. Does anybody use QuickBooks Online in here? Okay. This is the automatic renewal piece. You want to keep using QuickBooks Online, you got to keep paying for it every single month or annually or whatever, right? So you got to, and it's a big deal to have to move it. Okay. And the last one is contracts. Our cell phone companies are great at that, right? This is a lock-in. You just signed a two-year deal. And the only way you're getting out is if you pay us a boatload of money, okay? They, evil or not, they've been, when they get bought and sold, obviously they have other issues, right? Including infrastructure and towers and all that kind of stuff, but this is the single most valuable thing to them. If I have subscribers that can't get out, even if I buy them, by the time they get mad, I've maybe fixed it, right? So kind of take a look at that in your business and see what's going on there. All right, Our monopoly. This is getting harder and harder unless you're in the technology world, right? How do you create a business? And I'm not going to get into the whole unique selling proposition on this, but this is really what this is about. If you do something that only you do, and a buyer can see that as a very lucrative piece of the puzzle, this could be primarily a strategic buyer might look at this and say, how can I actually get this? Excuse me. You will be key to be bought at a high multiple. Okay? Now, some of this also depends on the risk, right? What's the competition like in the future, and how long can you have monopoly control? How innovative are you in the future, and can they continue that? How many here take customer satisfaction surveys? Handful of people do, okay? Happy customers are profitable customers. Why? One, because they share information with things. The big new thing, and maybe Mike can share this more, but getting people to go out on social networks and out online to Google Plus or to Yelp or whatever and say good things about you, tell others, share the information. What's your reputation look like? And this is a real big thing now. When this book was originally written, social media wasn't that big of a thing, but your online reputation and how your customers view you is huge. The bigger your social network, this is now a new piece for those that don't know, we actually have a relationship with John Warlow and his company now, and we have these training sessions that they do occasionally, and this is a new value driver for some buyers, because that allows them to use your social network to grow the rest of their business, because they can take part of your reputation. This is partially why sometimes when a buyer buys a company, they absorb that name instead of keeping their own. Okay, and I work for a couple of companies that did that, because the name that was the buyer wasn't that well regarded, and the acquiring company was. And part of it was because the customers really thought that company was great. Okay? Now, this is something you can actually do for yourself. I won't go too much into this. I'm just going to go this. You can go home today, start to take your customer base, your prior customer base. If you're in a service-based business and you don't have a lot of repeats, but you can get something from it, go back to that list and start giving these customers a score. And it's just this simple. How likely are they to refer you to their friends and their family? Okay? And you can give them a ranking. And then you can, in these little categories, are they highly likely, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10? Or are they not very likely to do it? Now, here's an interesting thing. As you guys know, I got a lot of nice friends in the audience today. But there are certain business types and certain business styles that are not that easy for people to refer business to. And it just so happens that my business is one of them. You know, and I know why? Because nobody wants to tell somebody that they think that their business needs help. Okay? That's the mentality. So you have to be, and if you're a lawyer or somebody else, right, this happens, right? If I tell you to go see that lawyer, then I must think that something's wrong with you, okay? So that plays, I bring that up because if you're in that kind of thing where you look at this and say, yeah, my customers are happy, but they're not likely to promote me, really, because they're afraid of letting people know that they, maybe psychologists are like this too, right? I don't want to see my psychologist because I don't want anybody to know that I'm seeing one. Okay? So think about your business in that regard too. If they're happy but they're not referring you, we need to do something about that. Okay, this is my favorite topic, and I don't want to rush through this, but I want to leave some time for questions. Okay? There's some statistics out there that I want to talk about. First one, my favorite ones. Less than 6% of all small businesses do $1 million in revenue or greater, okay? All businesses. If you're a woman in the room, your chances are even less or if you're a minority. Less than 2% of all women-owned businesses and minority-owned businesses do $1 million in revenue or greater. Everybody remember what I said earlier in the presentation about how risky your business is to a buyer? Which leads me to, will buyers even buy your business if it doesn't even do $1 million in revenue? Okay? What? Why that is? Well, I mean, we can have a conversation next week. I'm going to specifically talk about it. Oh yes, I'm sorry, for our podcast. Do we know why minority-owned businesses or women-owned businesses do, or maybe not as valuable to people? I don't know that it's as much about value as it is about the revenue drivers. There's something about getting to that $1 million of revenue that changes things for people. I have a client, we worked for 2 years on this. And many of you guys know, because we gave them a big award, we do this $1 million revenue club. Finnegan's Irish Amber is one of my clients. I've been working with her for 4 years. When we started working, she was at about $600,000 in revenue. And it was hard. I mean, this is a lot of work to produce $600,000 of revenue with just her, in her case. I mean, one person. And the fact of the matter is, we worked super hard to get her over that million. And as soon as we did, the doors started flooding open. She received another 50% growth that next year. We did 1.5 last year. We're probably going to do about 2.2 this year. And there isn't uniquely, there's just a lot of pieces to all of these things that we worked on. But the fact is that $1 million is somewhat of a trigger, okay? And it's a trigger for buyers too. They want to be able to see that there's growth there, that you've been able to take something and put it over the hump. So why does it happen? Well, there's lots of reasons. I'm going to speak next week on this, so I don't want to get into it. But part of it is the you in the hub and spoke. Okay? If your business is below that, you have to ask yourself what you really want. Is this a business that's going to be investment for you? Or did you buy yourself a job? And there's nothing wrong with buying yourself a job, right? If you want a job. But chances are very, very, very slim that anybody wants to buy your job, okay? Because you grew it. You knew that there was something you were really passionate about, and you went out and you started this business because you're really good at it. And then you kept it all to yourself. And this is why they can't get past that, because you feel like you have to be the person who talks to the customers. Like, and they want to only work with you. This is a big deal for me. I added 5 coaches in the last year. People hear me speak, they all want to work with me. But I can't have that happen, right? Because I can't build a company if I'm the only person that's delivering the service and I'm the only person talking to the customers. Okay? So this is it. The hub and spoke is about you. Decide what your role needs to be in this organization. And the goal is, a buyer doesn't want to buy you, because guess what? If you've been here for a while, you're probably not going to want to stay very long. And a buyer wants you to stay for a little bit, but the relationship gets very, very harried. For those who have sold businesses, do you kind of see what happens after the fact? Jackie's really good friends with Kieran. I won't pick on Kieran, but everybody knows Kieran just sold his company and sold it again. I mean, he's going to hang out at Jim Beam for a little while, but he doesn't want to do that. I mean, I talked to him too. He's not interested in hanging out forever there, right? The goal here is, and this is why this one's last, very, very critical, that we find ways to help you elevate yourself and your organization to the point that you can completely step out of it when it's time to step out of it. That when a buyer comes in, they don't look at this and say, wow, this is a great company. So happy you've been able to do that, but you are a challenge for me. And as soon as you don't want to be a part of this anymore, or I don't want you to be, because you know that founder syndrome is very, very clear at this thing, we have to do it. So here's the spoke. In each of these areas, your job is to kind of go back and start analyzing these things and decide how much of each of these pieces are you the single most important piece, and start there. Okay, start there. Okay, so if you do all the sales, A lot of business owners do the sales, right? Because they're afraid, you know, they're the only person that can do it. You provide all the servicing, you know, you do your own books. I'm promoting everybody in here today, but don't do your own books, okay? You need to review them. You need to be active with them, but you should not be doing them, okay? Delivering your service, if you're in a service-based business, is really, really hard, right? Because you start the business about you, Char, and everybody else who's kind of doing this. If they want your expertise, you got to find a way to systemize it. So this is where this goes. So some of you guys were able to take your sellability score beforehand, and if you did, you received it today from me. I printed it off. There's little cards, I think, at the table back there. If you don't have your email, you can take it. You can scan it on your iPad or whatever you want to do and take it. It takes 15 minutes, give or take. Okay? This is not a business valuation, right? You're not going to have to plug in a bunch of numbers. This is really your assessment of yourself in each of these areas. And there's some samples of a fake company on your table if you didn't take it, so you can kind of get a flavor for it. I encourage you to go back and take that assessment, and it's going to ask you these little questions about it, so you can come back and see which of these eight areas you should spend the most time in. Okay? Because you get a separate score for each one. And when you get done, what you guys will receive is just this page online that says what your score is. And then the actual report comes to me, and then we'll make sure that you get them so you can have a chance to look at them. And I also encourage you, if you would like to talk to about them or whatever, we'd be happy to sit down and go over them and help you figure out where you should be spending your time on it. So here's some, we mostly talked about what sellability means. So I'm going to talk to you about just a short thing, and this should probably have the trademark. So franchisetizing, this is purely my little sales pitch, okay? Franchisetizing is a trademarked process where you take the best of what a franchise business does. For those that don't know, only 8% of all the small business owners out there are actually franchises, but they do 40% of the revenues, okay? You don't need to franchise. That's not what this is about. But you need to take about the best of what they do in systemizing their business so that any buyer can come in and plop themselves down in a location and do it. And that's what the buyer wants to see. They want to see that your business is something that anybody can come in and buy and then operate at as good as you or better than you, so they can get their value out of their investment. All right, so we're gonna have questions for a few minutes before we have to go. I just wanna let you guys know, there are 12 million baby boomer business owners out there, all looking to get out in the next 10 to 20 years, okay? And most of those people, if we do all these statistics, aren't doing $1 million in revenue or greater. So their businesses aren't that value. And this is where I kind of get into my little thing for Sherry and Steph. We had to change that, okay? I feel like we've got an opportunity here in our economy and everything else. These businesses need to, they hire people, and we need to have the self-sustaining businesses. Too many businesses just close their doors. About 2.5 years ago, maybe it's 3 years ago, I had a day of this. I'm reading my Minneapolis St. Paul magazine, and one of my favorite sections is the restaurant section in the back, and they're like, here are the openings, and here are the closings. And I used to work in downtown Wayzata, and a little restaurant called Black's Ford closed. Used to be at the end of the thing. And why did they close? Because of family illness. That was what it said, okay? Family illness. So later in the day, I go to my post office box. At the time, I didn't have an office. I went to the post office box, and I parked right in front of this, in the North Oaks Shopping Village Center, Shopping Center, there's a jeweler store. And it had a sign on the door, and it says, oh, we're gonna be closed for 2 weeks for a family vacation. And on this single day, I said, how is it possible that a business can't be open and go on vacation? You guys are sitting there thinking about your business and really wanting more out of it. And everybody in the room has some goal in that. Sorry, I get so emotional about that. This is a big deal. So I encourage you guys to take a really good look and get your business and anybody else you know to get it over that hump and build something that new buyers, young buyers can come in and make and keep people hired and move on to the future. All right, questions?
Can we get you along with the poll?
Oh, sure.